Shit. Welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. This is a long time in the making. Finally, the man, the myth, the legend, Shit Show Chris.
Wow, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, big pressure. What song do you want played when you walk into a room?
You know, I've always been a Who fan, and I've always loved the great. So my favorite band's always been The Who, and I could name 30 songs. But I always come back to Terrapin Station by The Grateful Dead. I can remember the first time I heard it with my buddy Richie in the backyard of high school. And I really loved The Dead, so that always speaks to me. You can't play it because it's like a 45-minute song, and it crescendos in a couple of spots. But yeah, I love Terrapin Station by The Dead.
It'll just be the longest Shit Show Saturday episode ever.
Exactly.
I got to see The Who. Have you seen them?
So my senior year of high school, they came to Chicago twice, saw them twice. Then a guy sat on a building and on the top of the building and wouldn't get off until they came back to play again because it was their final tour. And they actually came back to Chicago for a third show, and I saw them for a third time.
Wow.
Yeah. So three times in a year. And then, you know, that was 84. So then they were done. You know, they didn't come back like all these other bands, you know.
Well, no, I saw them in Tahoe like 3 or 4 years ago.
The full band?
Probably not the full band, but like, you know, at least the two main guys.
Yeah, it's Townsend
and
Daltrey.
Yeah, Daltrey. They were both there. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know. That's outstanding.
It was the shit. It was so fun.
They are so good.
They are so good.
Yeah. I'm stuck in the 60s rock and roll. That's what makes
I love it. Okay, carb.
Much to my chagrin, it's breads, you know, but breads go right to my belly. If I had to live on bread and butter alone and toast and cheese, I would. So by far it's bread, but I am avoiding it.
But what kind of bread?
Oh, gosh. Fresh baked whites.
Fresh bread. You like the fresh kind?
Oh, totally. That, you know, a good sourdough. You know, the things that I like, I'm kind of whorish. So if it's bread, I'm in.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I don't like rye bread, though. I don't like rye.
But like on a patty melt? Like,
no. Not a rye gal.
See, I'm kind of whorish like that. Like I, in the right application, I can eat any bread.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Cheese.
Same concept. You know, I always say I grew up, you know, about 45 minutes from Wisconsin border. So I'm a cheesehead. Like if I had to die and bring one cheese with me to heaven, it wouldn't be like an artisan cheddar because they can get a little bitter and greasy. But like, give me a good organic valley sharp cheddar or a good organic valley mild cheddar, you know, and that's only because there's a lot of applications with it. Like I can, you know, I love blue cheese, but I can't eat it every day, all day. So it's kind of like the utility cheese. I need my cheese.
Cheddar seems to be the king. We get more cheddar than anything else.
Yeah, I was trying to think. It's like the opposite. Like, what is the cheese I don't like? Because I love literally every cheese. And maybe it's Swiss is the only cheese I don't like. But I would eat every other cheese on this earth.
I like a light Swiss, like, but the really strong ones, I can't.
Yeah, it's got that taste to me that doesn't appeal. But, like, it's more like what don't I like? Because I like every bread. Maybe there's one I don't like. I like every cheese out there, too.
I don't think anyone has ever said Swiss.
I get a taste in my mouth while I'm saying Swiss. That's just, I just don't like it.
You can see it, folks. condiment.
Again, I'm going to go under the premise I got to die and bring one with me.
Yes, that's the whole point.
Yeah. I used to use blue cheese as a condiment. You know, like I could put blue cheese on anything, but if I had to bring one, it's going to be a combo. It's going to be a mix of mayonnaise and mustard. And if you mix them together, they make a great little dip. So I know that's cheating.
That's kind of a cheat.
All right, fine. I'll go with.
What if you had to pick between mayonnaise and mustard?
I think I would go with a stone ground mustard.
Mustard. Okay.
Also because I know it's healthy too. Like, I'm getting a little mustard seed in me, you know?
No, that's not my consideration.
I know. I know.
I have mayonnaise all day. Okay, so how did you learn that you were an adult child?
You know, and I know you know a lot of this, but mine was one of neglect. So I was just kind of blowing through life, doing life however I was doing it. But, you know, my dad always sent the messaging, I'm going to say terrible messaging around women and objectification. And, you know, he would always look at an attractive gal and say, well, you're not going to marry her. He didn't have me till he was 40. He didn't have my brother till he was 50, you know. So I never even thought about a long-term relationship, even in deep into my 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, as my friends started getting married and peeling off, and I wanted to start making relationships work. And so I really started realizing, after I got divorced, I went through a tough time, but had no awareness. And then after the loss of a relationship with Amy, I cratered. And that was the first time I realized that it was more than just relationship loss. You know, that abandonment wound, that visceral feeling of aloneness and hopelessness. And that was the first time. And that was probably, I'm going to call it 7 years ago. It was the first time I connected it to something other than me, you know. But I was rewarded a lot as a young kid. In the 80s, if you were sleeping around and had a lot of girlfriends, you were like pedestalized. You're not pedestalized, that's too strong, but you know what I mean. You were like, no one looked at you as anything but as a positive. And I had an internal feeling like that wasn't a positive thing, even though society was rewarding me for it, you know. So there were some feelings that were off in high school and college. But yeah, I would say when I wanted relationship to work and I realized I didn't have the skills to make relationship work, as I realized I needed to look in the mirror.
And do you remember when you learned like the term adult child?
Yeah. So after Amy, and I call her the gift because she was the gift that was a catalyst for me to do some of this work. And when I spiral, I heard the expression, you fall through a crevice and you're trying to grasp at roots, anything to stabilize. So after Amy, I was doing everything. I went to an intensive men's weekend and went to joined a thing that was 6 months and a program, and found another counselor. And that counselor had said, you should maybe consider ACA. And I was still in that I'll try anything mode. And I remember going in my first meeting, kind of hearing my story and somebody else and being angry, like all these effing professionals out there. And no one knew that ACA was a tool. And it goes to spirituality too. Like, I didn't grow up in a religious household. I was baptized Episcopalian. I was always the one that like felt like God is all inclusive and loving. And just that the fact that we had different religions. My religion was created because a king wanted to get divorced and jerk off.
Yes.
I mean, so that always didn't want like... It didn't feel very clean to me. So when I remember hearing like my story in somebody else, it felt spiritual. That was at first kind of like, wow, I'm not alone. That whole warm feeling. And I still get it. You know, the meeting yesterday was that Laura ran was just warm. It was just outstanding because of so much relatability. And I don't think that will ever end. Every time I hear something that relates, that I can relate to, it just feels like a sense of belonging.
Love a good Henry VIII reference.
Yeah, I mean, really, come on, man. You create that, you leave the
church. Did you ever watch The Tudors?
No, I haven't.
Excellent show. Excellent show.
But think about it, 10,000 feet. Oh, the Church of England doesn't, the Catholicism doesn't allow me to get divorced. I'm going to create the Church of England so I can get divorced. And oh, by the way, you can jerk off and it's not a sin either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I'll kill a couple of my wives.
Yeah. How convenient.
He had one of them. How did you find the podcast?
I'm going to say I don't remember. It was definitely a search of adult child, you know, podcasts. I love podcasts, you know, and because I can listen to them, I can go to sleep to them. So I guarantee it was probably a search for adult child. And that's where I found ACA Toolbox, where they do like 15-minute shares in Jersey. That's where I found Voices Across America, where they do a long share on Thursdays. And I think you absolutely came up in that.
So when you joined the community, I feel like you were hitting another bottom.
Yeah. We call that Kate bottom.
Yeah. Do you want to share about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, like, to look back at that bottom, you know, in terms of moving forward, it's getting into a relationship that isn't workable. And Kate and I had a lot of open conversations about being different places in life. She's got three younger children. I'm transitioning out of a career, out of potentially a relocation. So we talk about it more than occasionally. And I'm not one to blame others, but I think it was a situation where she was hoping it would be different. She was hoping that. So even though I set boundaries around it, was fully disclosed and was very upfront and honest with her, you still end up having feelings for somebody, you know, and we were with each other for a few years. And there's a double thing in here for me. There's so that abandonment got triggered, but there's also this, I had to make mom okay when I was a child, I think, emotionally. So when I know I'm not responsible intuitively for somebody else's feelings, but when I hurt somebody emotionally, I feel it too. So even today, I literally haven't seen her. June will be a year since I've literally seen her. We still work with each other. Fortunately, I don't have to go in the office and there's some communication, but there's still this feeling like if I go live my life, there's a tinge of guilt in that because I'm going to hurt her again. And that just feels like that little boy that needed my mom to be okay. And if I hurt, if a woman is hurting in my life, I've got a sense of responsibility for it. Mm-hmm. But in terms of hitting a bottom, I went to the Meadows for a week within 30 days after we broke up. Like I didn't know how to regulate my emotions. I didn't feel safe in this world. I wasn't suicidal, but I was so unstable. So I went to the Meadows to try to stabilize it, and it took.
Were you in a particular program, or was it just like a?
I'm going to call it the standard one, the one that kind of opens the door to other things. You know, I think the real test, Andrew, will be when inevitably loss comes again in my life, how I handle it. But my pattern is kind of like, which is different, would be recover from that deep loss. Takes a year, 18 months, but just to get better enough to go find somebody else or go date again. Now it's like I'm doing that process of stabilizing and feeling better, and I'm not seeking relationship to make myself feel better. But it was absolutely, again, Amy and then Kate, like a 2-year-old little boy reaction without any governance over my emotions and no emotional sobriety around it. But it was a major trigger and go right back to that original wounding, you know?
I know. I've been there.
To the point, like, why the hell would I want to go there again? You know, maybe I just stay.
It's going to be different, though. It'll be different.
I hope so. You know, I mean, you don't know until it happens again. But I'd be fibbing to say there's not some real hesitation and reservation about going there again.
Of course, 100%.
I think Lucy said yesterday, like, her therapist had said, you know, you're nervous system is still for lack of a better word, not to, on edge. Like you're just not, your nervous system isn't ready to go there again because it's still healing. And I related to that a lot. I think we all want to get better in 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months, and realizing it could be, you know, 60 months. Because I think it takes longer for my nervous system to heal than I ever thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've made huge strides already, so.
Good to know.
Huge. Huge.
Good to know. Thank you for the third-party edification.
Yes.
All right, shit show ladies. Have you ever had those days where everything just feels so much damn harder than normal and you can't figure out why? I already know the answer to that question is yes. And boy, have I definitely had more than my fair share of those days and totally get just how frustrating this can be. But recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress, lack of sleep, a dysregulated nervous system. It could also be my hormones at play. And that is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Any shit show can do it. Just answer a few questions about what you've been going through and where you're at in life. After taking this quiz, you'll get personalized recommendations to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. So I took this hormone quiz myself. The quiz suggested that my body may be overloaded with estrogen, which is affecting me in all kinds of ways. And one of the recommendations that I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, chronic fatigue, weight gain, mood swings, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. Now, taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's also about investing in our healing journey. And so by taking this quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance, which will allow you to start making small, intentional changes to support you on this healing journey. Whether it's the Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product, the quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. So if you're ready to start feeling like yourself again, head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find out the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
So let's talk about your childhood. What do you want to share?
Immediately, lost child comes up. Apparently, I was such a happy baby that I used to choke because I would laugh so hard, like that happy of a baby. And there was a time when my parents got separated pre-verbal. We don't even know. My sister and I kind of did some reverse math in about 18 months. But I can remember, and it's a part that I actually exiled. Yeah, I actually unburdened this exile, was the 18-month-old that was pulled out of my mother's arms to go to my dad because that was visitation. So while I was 18 months old, I'm going to use the word ripped out of my mom's arms. I know it sounds dramatic, but it felt like being ripped out of my mom's arms, distraught, crying, inconsolable to go with my dad. So it was just a lot of like that kind of emotional chaos. And there was it was obligatory. I had to go to my dad's. I don't think my dad was there emotionally for me. He was a good man that way. He was a gentleman, you know, but there was it was probably just sit in the back of the car and cry if you're done crying versus a soothing and that kind of stuff. So I never had my dad in my child like mine was always the enemy. He was always the reason for the divorce. And not because my mom triangulated. It was just that my mom was safe. my dad wasn't safe kind of feeling. You know, I obviously I don't know. I think my mom was depressed, and I think that's where that goes back to me being responsible for a partner's feelings. I think it was like this, I have this vision of like holding on to my mom's leg because she wasn't okay and wanting her to be okay, like just needing her to be okay so I was okay. And I still get that same kind of sense in a relationship. If somebody's not okay in a relationship, I have a tendency to not be okay. And I would say that's getting better. I don't own other people's emotions as much. And then the other dynamic that I think is a couple of dynamics that are pretty important is, so I always said I went to sadness. My sister went to anger. While I at least had my mother to be a little safe haven for me, my sister and her really had nobody. In her mind, dad left for another woman. As soon as my dad married my stepmother, my sister fell off the cliff. She became, I don't even want to call the identified patient, but she just got angry. She took a lot of that anger out on me. Like, she physically abused me at every turn. You know, it would be a punch in the gut or be in the backyard and she'd come running at me and kick me. And she just resented me. And I tell you, one of the big things out of this work is I get her. You know what I mean? I get how our childhood manifested in her. So I can hold space for her, you know, because I understand her story. But so I never had a sibling relationship either. Again, down that lost child path, it's like I lived like two houses away from my grade school from kindergarten through sixth grade. And I remember being lost in the playground. There was no other child from a divorced family that I met until I was a sophomore in high school. So that feeling of being different, because I didn't have a dad at home, you know, it just kind of took the luster off, you know. And then after that, I kind of became a jester, like making my mom laugh. And so I always say I used to make my mom laugh until she'd fart. Like, get mom to fart would be the goal. That was a tool for me. So I think it was kind of lost child and then into that kind of jester mode. So it's like identity. Like, my sister front run me. She was the rebel child. I saw what not to do to navigate kind of that junior high and high school. You know, she didn't finish high school. She went to night class to finish. She partied. She actually lived with another family. Like, she moved out. And when that happened, there was more peace. So my sister, and I don't say this in a blaming way, was always a source of chaos. So when that chaos was gone, there was kind of a calm. And she admittedly still thrives in chaos. So it's still an energy. Like, I may go visit her at the end of May and I've decided to rent a place versus she's got four dogs, she's got a lot going on. So want to see her, but so chaos is not something I thrive on. You know, I thrive on more peace and quiet, and that's probably why I'm more of an isolator. Yeah, so I think it's just kind of like a blur. I did what I needed to do, found drugs and alcohol in high school, and the crew I hung out with, we were just animals. I mean, we were just animals. I didn't have a beer to my sophomore year of high school, but boy, after that, the floodgates opened, and that didn't stop until I was done with hangovers. You know what I mean? I do have an addictive personality, but I've never, like, I just don't drink because it doesn't serve me anymore. I don't do any other drugs because they don't serve me anymore. But boy, get a little nicotine in my purview. And, you know, and what's also coming up is, like, I just reconnected with a high school buddy that actually attempted suicide. And everyone's perception of me is completely different than my own. Everyone thought I was the gregarious, successful, you know, my love life changed. I was a 120-pound freshman in high school and a junior, Jackie R. She was the queen of the court, just stunningly gorgeous. She liked me. We went out. After that, I was on everyone's radar screen. And I think that's when I started using relationships, you know, as a way to self-soothe. But to back up, there was a situation, you know, a molestation when I was in third grade. And I became pretty highly sexualized after that. And Fletcher, and I always thought it was because of that event, but I think that that was a self-soothing technique more than the abuse. It was just in a long line of abuse with me. So one molestation was, it might as well have been being punched in the head. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a sexual event. I could tell it was coming from control and anger more than sex, you know? So, but I do think I used sex as a self-soothing tool. But that relationship in high school, she went to college, came back, and I'll never forget, we went to the beach and she said she had slept with somebody. And I got really jealous. And that jealousy feeling was such an uncomfortable feeling. Like, I didn't want to go there ever again. So that's when I really think I started becoming avoidant. Don't ever care enough about somebody where those feelings could be unearthed again. So I kind of became a male whore for a decade or so, you know, and it just blowing and going.
When would you say that after Kate was kind of like your first kind of like quote bottom? I know that's when you like came to terms with things, but like what about when your marriage ended?
So Amy was the first bottom.
Yeah.
She allowed me to at least identify maybe an abandonment wound a little bit. But at that, all I really did was just get better. You know, so I understood some stuff. I did a lot of work to feel okay. But I didn't do the deep work. My relationship, you know, gosh, if I do a relationship history, Mary was her name. She was engaged to a guy in town. We worked with each other. I was out of a relationship, feeling miserable. You know, another pattern, I've read it recently, like never have a good day until I'm in a relationship again, like survive, be okay, but never really joyous until I get another relationship. So I was out of a relationship and I said, I'm going to go down to Palm Beach and grab some clothes. I needed some slacks. And she looked at me and she said, I'll go with you. And I was like, whoa, I would never put her on the radar screen. And then my justification to get married, it was blonde hair, blue eyed, Catholic girl, one of six kids, great family. I'm never going to find anything better. But there was never a real passion. I didn't have the ability to be really intimate with anybody. Still working on that candidly. And it's interesting. She's tried to reach back out to reconnect for about 15 years because she had regret. When we got divorced, we negotiated our divorce in about 30 minutes. Get two real estate brokers together to negotiate a divorce. It took us about 30 minutes.
How long were you guys married?
So we dated for 2 or 3 years, but we were only married for about 18 months. But she reached out and I owned it. Like when we were sitting on the couch and I was begging her to work on it, like we should work on this, we should work on this. She had an affair and she was already kind of with this other guy. So she didn't want to work on it. And it was really a manipulation. I remember thinking to myself, oh, cool. She's ending it. I'm good. But when she reached out in subsequent years, I finally one time said, you know, Mary, I abandoned you emotionally. I didn't blame her for having an affair. I wasn't giving her the emotional needs she had. So she was riddled in this guilt about not working on it and kind of coming back to maybe heal that wound. So it was nice to let her off the hook, to let her know for me to own a portion of that. You know, but people, my friends will say during that era after that divorce, like you were in terrible shape. So that emotional reaction was the same. After Mary and I got divorced, I mean, I was kind of like dating a lot and filling myself through relationships, other There was no healthy pattern after that. So my patterns after breakup have gotten healthier and healthier, you know, fortunately.
So you've been obviously doing IFS, and then you've been going through, are you done with Fletcher's? You did what, like part one and part two?
I think they call it the Align, I forget the name, the Align course. It was 6 months, 3 days a week, an hour and a half, 3 days a week for 6 months. I think I missed one. So I was pretty dedicated to it. So
what's been helpful for you? Like what, when you think about how you've gotten through the last year?
Yeah. I'm going to say all of it, you know, I wouldn't give up a piece of it. I think that what feels right now is that self-love, that, you know, they got a 12 needs course that I want to take. Like, really, what do I want? What do I need? And it sounds very selfish to say that, but I think there's a part of me that, you know, and I'm not like finding my identity, like what makes Chris happy. And that feels very awkward. You know, I still come from this place of, I want to do some really cool things on this earth, but I don't want to do it alone. And getting to a place where finding what I want to do and living my life and knowing that if I'm healthy, a relationship happens or it not, or it doesn't, kind of thing. So I think all this work has opened up different healing doors. And I think it's really, this expression is so weird, but loving myself, like filling myself up and being okay with me and making a relationship interdependent, not codependent, you know. But it's all, and I need, and this is a value. I mean, like, what's my value system? Part of my value system is going to be inner growth. Like, shame on me if I get in a relationship and I don't continue this work. Like, this is becoming a core value. I can get a meshed in relationship and the outside world doesn't exist. I'm neglecting friendships, and I don't want to do that. You know, I want to stay on this path. It's nourishing. Personal growth is nourishing. And it does get better. Like, my relationships are better. Friendships and communication. So everything's right on time. I wouldn't give up anything.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, is just for anybody who might be listening right now who's struggling. Because, I mean, there were plenty of times over the past year where I think that you had, if you convince you're never going to feel better ever again.
Yeah. You know, the practice has really helped me. I mean, you talk about IFS, like I did some IFS and I was still in trauma. It was ineffective. It was re-traumatizing more than it was effective for me because I wasn't ready. You know, now after months, I unburdened my first exile. And then all these other parts are starting to show up. So now I just feel like that's a fertile, beautiful ground to start investigating and coming from a place. You know, I always used to come from a place when I saw characteristic that applied to me, I went to shame. Oh, there's something else wrong with me. I'm getting to the point on good days when I see something that applies, that it's like, oh, this is a growing edge. I get it, you know, and that's that self-compassion. I understand why I am who I am. And historically, that would have been an excuse. Oh, I'm this way because of that, almost a blaming way. Now it's coming from more of a self-compassion way. But for me, like, I got up to like 7 daily readers every morning and a morning meditation, and it worked. Like, hearing, you know, good inputs and hearing beautiful things and being able to receive it and meditating, it really helped. Like, a good reading can shift my day, but I had to be out of trauma to receive. And I think for the people that are really in it right now, it's just hold yourself, give yourself time. It'll shift. Like, even though you know you don't feel it's gonna, it will shift, and just get to a place where you can receive and you can understand it's gentler than your internal nervous system is telling you. And I think for me, I had to survive to get there, so to speak. You know, I mean,
absolutely,
whatever it takes if someone's really in that dark place. You know, and nothing's wrong, you know, obviously, as long as it's, you know, not detrimental to your health, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Do what you can. Pick your battles.
And hug it. I mean, I was in the Fletcher course and the gal was really in it. And we talked about just hugging yourself. I mean, I learned how to literally hug myself, putting my right arm under my pit and my left arm wrapped over my shoulder. And just hugging myself like a child. I can't tell you how many nights and mm-hmm. I would do that. And it was how self-soothing that was. So my perspective, me calming down that nervous system to a place where I could receive a little bit and grow versus survive.
Mm-hmm. Mm. All right. Well, give me three things that you like about yourself.
Ugh. No, it's... I mean, this is one I thought of. I had a dad that was narcissistic, and I've always been pretty self-effacing because I always was afraid of having a big ego, and mm-hmm. I probably have a bigger one than I know, but I do like the fact that I'm humble. I'm really proud that I've got my priority, what I believe are the right priorities in order. I care about this earth. I care about people. It's not about how many boats I have, how big my house is. It's much deeper and broader than that. So I'm not a good capitalist, even though I was really good at being a capitalist. It doesn't ring true for me as something that's soul-filling. So I feel like I've got like my priorities right where I want them. I know what matters. And part of that is I'm generous. Like I like giving away what I have, you know, I can't bring it with me kind of thing. So I like to be generous and give away what I've got, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Beautiful. Hoping for the future.
Keep filling up that hole not in a desperate way, but in a gentle, kind, I feel like every time I'm in a meeting, I'm filling myself up a little bit more, you know, and I want to just continue on that path because I think as I fill myself up, life becomes a lot easier and everything else is kind of a trickle down from that. Relationship matters less, not that it's not important. So it's almost like as I do this work and continue to nourish myself, the pressure on the outside world to fill me up continues to go down. And if I continue on that path, like I'm going to have peace and joy and that goal or that hope sounds like a nice place to be when you're out there, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I'm not going to have very much peace or joy if I can't find my fucking computer. Sorry.
I hear you. Can you put you got any air tags available? So when you do find it,
I've never lost my. I've never had this happen. I mean, I lose a million other things, but I've never lost something like this. Well, it has been such a joy to have you in my life. I've loved watching you grow. You've just stayed the course. Seriously, like you've just stuck with it, and I've seen the fruits of your labor, and I hope that you have too. But I mean, I've really the growth I've seen in you has been quite profound.
Yeah, candidly, I probably see it less than you do. You know, and that's not unusual. And I think something that I want to mention is like real connection. I think between being bullied as a child and the intimacy issues, it has been, I want to frame it in the past, it's hard to have like real connection and that shifting. Like, in terms of, I want to continue to be vulnerable enough to have real connection, not put on a mask, and really connect with people, because there's a feeling of enmeshment, even with guy friends or whoever, that when people get close, I have a tendency to push away, and I'm working against that tendency to push away and allowing like our relationship to really flourish, not just using a person to be okay and getting what I need from them and making that a two-way street, you know? I probably do it more than I know, but I want to be more intentional about that too.
Thanks, my dude.
This
was beautiful. Let it all go. What's making you slow now? Let it all go.